I was struck as I thought again about the Christmas Eve sermon. It is the bane of a preacher's existence in some ways, and yet a great privilege. For year after year, one wonders how is one to capture the attention of the audience who have heard this story over and over and over again. I'd like to think that over the years I've been preaching, I've already preached out my best Christmas sermons. But that's not the point. The point is we are met together again to experience a birthing. And the Spirit of God uses whatever is uttered in ways that can bring fresh perspectives to us. But something that struck me as I read over the story again, and I spoke a little bit about this during Advent, but it just seemed to continually impress itself upon me as this phrase, because we hear it all the time. Do not be afraid. Don't be afraid. And as soon as I say that, I'm sure you, like me, immediately think about the things of which we are afraid. True? Because fear is with us all the time. That's why I've kind of had a cheeky little title here. Don't be afraid. Really? Really? Come on. Look around. But aren't those words what is uttered in the most caring and reassuring of intentions? When a mother says to her child, "Don't be afraid," as the child embarks on her first solo bike ride, and the mother releases her hand from the seat, and off she goes. First time, no training wheels, no parent holding. Or the words that are mentioned, "Don't be afraid," when a father takes his son onto the ice on those thin metal blades to participate in that quintessential Canadian pastime, skating. Don't be afraid. Or a grandmother putting her granddaughter to sleep at night, who's terrified of the dark. Don't be afraid. Everything will be okay. Or a well-meaning flight attendant reassuring an exceedingly anxious and nervous flyer who can't stand being on a plane that high. Don't be afraid, everything will be okay. Or the surgeon whispers to you just before she signals to the anesthetist to put you under. Don't be afraid as she operates. Or even the operator at the, well, used to be the X, it is no more, who closes down that clamp on the drop zone and says, "Don't be afraid, it's a piece of cake." We hear those words over and over. Parents tell their children before they go off to school, "Don't be afraid, it'll be okay." And it's usually meant as reassurance, gentle urging and encouragement. Sometimes, though, it's used as a taunting expression, isn't it? "Don't be afraid." It really means, "Don't be a wuss. You're such a suck. Come on." Taunting. But no matter how it is mentioned, no matter how it is intoned, such attempts at reassurance are not always experienced as such. Because really, nobody knows how things are going to turn out, do they? You see, it is true that children do fall on the ice and hurt their elbows. Girls fall off their bikes and break their arms. Children wake up from night terrors or nightmares in the middle of the night. Sometimes the surgery goes wrong. Sometimes planes crash. And even more recently, sometimes a severely troubled young man with many guns shoots his way into a school and commits unspeakable horror. So when we hear those words, "Don't be afraid," there's a part of us that wants to cry out, "Really? Really? Don't be afraid." You see, it's a tough sell, this phrase, don't be afraid. Because if truth be told, we are addicted to fear. We are fearful of so much and so many things. Fearful that she doesn't love me enough. He won't think well of me. What do my colleagues think? I won't get ahead. I don't have enough money. I don't look the right way. I don't drive the right car. Do I matter to the people that I care about? We have fear all around us. So these words, you would forgive the speaker if for us they don't sound a little hollow at times. And yet, the truth is, the Bible is full of this phrase or versions of it. Fear not, do not be afraid. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there are not some legitimate fears. Fears that alert us to danger. I have fears. Collectively, we may have fears. I'm a little bit fearful of the recently passed Sharia law constitution in Egypt. I become fearful, yes, prayerful, but fearful of the unsettled tension in the Middle East. We're fearful about the growing household and personal debt of Canadians, about the sluggish economy. So there are some legitimate fears. You might remember during the last Great Depression, not the one a few years ago, but the big one, 1933, that Franklin D. Roosevelt spoke the words to a nation, "Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance." You see, fear can grip us. It can choke the faith out of our hearts. It was true in 1933 when these words were uttered. It was true at the first Christmas. It's true today. And this Christmas Eve, God speaks a reassuring word to us. Don't be afraid. Now, are we going to respond, really? We might. But hold off a second and let's explore what this fear really is. You see, in the Bible, God sounds like a broken record. A broken record because they are, in the Protestant version of the Bible, counted, somebody did, 365 references to that phrase, "Fear not, do not be afraid." Does that number sound familiar? The uttering of "do not be afraid" is not a once and for all utterance. That is why God sounds like a broken record in Scripture, repeating over and over through God's prophet and through the psalmist and through every means possible, "Do not be afraid, do not be afraid." The Lord said it to Abraham before cutting a covenant with him, "Do not be afraid." Gabriel said it to Daniel, "Do not be afraid." God offers these encouraging words through the prophet Isaiah, "Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are of fearful heart, be strong. Do not fear. Here is your God." The angel said to Zechariah also, "Do not fear." Another angel said to the shepherds, "Do not be afraid." Another angel said to Mary, "Don't be afraid," for she was troubled of heart. Throughout his ministry, Jesus said to his disciples, to others, "Do not be afraid." In the day of resurrection, Mary came and Jesus said it again, "Do not be afraid." Doesn't God sound like a broken record? Do not be afraid. What could it be that God is getting at? What is it? You see, even our Christmas story tonight begins in fear. It may not be obvious as Judy read it. "In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world." Sounds fairly benign, doesn't it? Except if we remember our history, if we are reminded of what the life was like and the political climate was in the day, that decree set fear afoot in the hearts, especially of the poorest citizens. Because you see, a census, the only purpose for census taking was in order to make sure that the tax rolls were accurate. And the tax burden was already onerous, especially on the peasants. Upwards of 65% of their income could be going to all kinds of taxes. It's scrupulous toll collectors. There was a tax for the empire, tax for the local district, tax for the town, tax for everything. So when this decree is made, fear is struck into the hearts of people when they hear it. Fear begins our Christmas story tonight. So how can we hear the words, "Do not be afraid"? Do not be afraid. Surely the Bible has a lot to say about fear, because fear blocks us from being able to be the best that God calls us to be. It also prevents us from being joyful. It prevents us from loving our neighbor as we are to love ourselves, and loving God as we are to love. Fear is debilitating. It robs us of joy. It robs us of a sense of sufficiency and contentment. It robs us of the very life that we aim and desire to live. That is why the Bible speaks over and over and over about this fear. In an article in the Christian Century magazine, the author Peter Stenke wrote, "When fear becomes overwhelming, alertness diminishes and adrenaline floods the body, riveting the body on the object of the fear. Tunnel vision occurs and fear takes over." And Stenke notices and says, "Fear replaces reason with tunnel vision." Robert Frost, the poet, once said that what really frightened him was frightened people. Mother Teresa had an antidote to this. A woman of faith, a woman who observed life, a woman who herself knew fear and spoke of that fear, but knew how to depend on God and the sisters and the poor to help her get a grip of that fear. To trust the words of God, "Do not be afraid, for I am with you." Written by hand on the side of one of the walls where she served the poor in Calcutta is this little ditty. "People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and sincere, people will deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight. Create anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, some may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. Give the best you have and it will never be enough. Give the best anyway. In the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway." Fear restrains us, constrains us, paralyzes us, so that we cannot do those things that we are called to do in the world. Jesus Christ comes close to us, comes close to us in this Christmas time. Love came down at Christmas to banish fear. And let me make something perfectly clear. This is not a panacea, and this is not some sort of Pollyannish world. Remember that this Christ comes into the context of a drama that unfolds amidst the fear. We sometimes forget that although this word of reassurance was offered to Mary, that wasn't the last time that Mary was afraid. It wasn't the last time that Joseph was afraid. The story continues about Herod, who in a rage sought to do away with and kill this potential rival to his throne when he heard through the Magi that some king of the Jews is to be born. And orders that all of the male children 2 years and under be slaughtered. Mary and Joseph flee to Egypt in fear. Just because God utters, "Don't be afraid," it doesn't mean fear is no longer. What it means is that we listen for that word because God is speaking it again and again and again. That is metaphorical 365 times in the Bible. Every day, every moment, we need the reassurance that we need not be afraid. Why? Not because they're not legitimate things to fear, but because there's that type of fear that renders us paralyzed from being able to live our lives in such a way that they are spent for the world. Fear distorts our aims. It clouds our vision. It causes us to pursue that which is not fulfilling. Recently, I was saying to the congregation, what is it that we really yearn for? I believe that we are distracted too often by the competitive nature of our society. Ultra-competitive. I'm not talking about fun competition. That's okay. But the kind of competitiveness that puts another down, either in one view or heart, or literally, structurally, through policies. Because we're striving to be the best in the world. And the call of God, which banishes that fear, to create space for us to discern how we can use our lives and our gifts to be the best for the world. Jesus speaks into the fear of that first Christmas story by coming as God with us, Emmanuel. Whenever we hear that invitation and admonition, "Do not be afraid," it is because I am with you. The Lord God is at hand. I will not abandon you. That has come true tonight. It has come true again and again. God, Emmanuel, Jesus, God with us. It was noted by movie critic Paul Harris, the pervasive apocalyptic themes that are in our cinema, in our video games, especially this year. In fact, one writer of a well-known video game magazine called this the year of the apocalypse, 2012. Maybe it had something to do with the Mayan prophecy, I don't know. Not sure. We're still here, though. We're still here. But from art house films to animation to popcorn blockbuster, Paul Harris wrote, "Destroying the world has never been more in vogue. Directors and movie studios are clamoring over one another to see who can create the most dystopian and destructive vision of the near future." Now let me make a confession here. I have to admit that I consume some dystopia. Any of you have heard of the show The Walking Dead? Yes, I know. You think, boy, he's really twisted and weird. But that's my confession for the night. It is about zombies and so forth, but the world coming to an end. Yes, it's all around us. But the truth of the matter is that all of those depictions offer no hope. Or if there is hope, it is in a solitary individual or a small group of people who are defying the malaise that has captured, the violence that has overtaken, the paralysis and the lack of hope that consumes all those involved. The Christmas story is a story of hope. It is not a story that ignores the reality of violence and trauma and brokenness and depression and pain and suffering and death. It is into that very reality that the story is birthed. Birthed with the words, "Do not be afraid." For God does not banish the circumstances that may create fear. But what God does is give us the strength and the resources and the community and the prayer and discernment and the joy necessary for being able to contend with those situations that cause fear. That is the gift of joy. That is the gift of hope. That is the gift of accompaniment. It is the gift of birthing. Some of you may be familiar with that movie, The Last Exotic Marigold Hotel. There's a character in there that mentions to another, "Don't worry, everything will be okay in the end. And if everything is not okay, then it's not the end." The truth is, when God utters those words, "Don't be afraid." What will be okay is the promise of God's presence, the promise of God's power, the promise of God's forgiveness, the promise of God's love, the promise of God's grace. The promise of all those things that make for sustenance to live our lives victoriously, not unscathed, but in spite of woundedness, healing, in spite of war, peace, in spite of wrong, justice, in spite of hurt, salve and comfort, in spite of grief, love and solace. I want to end by talking about how fear has been not banished, but embraced and enfolded in the life of at least one of the families that I've heard of and read of that terrible tragedy in Sandy Hook School. One of the 20 children, little 6-year-old Ava Marquez Green, is depicted by her parents, who have shared with the world a home video. The home video is of little 6-year-old Ava standing beside her brother, Isaiah, at the piano, playing a hymn. And Ava sings that hymn, the first verse. Her very beautiful, ebullient, expressive face, with confidence and stridency, she looks at the music as her brother plays and sings. Come thou almighty King, help us thy name to sing. Help us to praise, Father all glorious, o'er all victorious. Come and reign over us, Ancient of Days. That first verse of that hymn is a prayer. Come. Come and reign over us. Come and be victorious. Come and be with us. Come and defy the violence. Come and bring salve to the brokenhearted. She ends by looking into the camera and waving with a smile as impish and cute as it is gloriously faithful. She loved the hymns that she learned at church, and her family said her faith sustained her even in her young age. Don't be afraid. You see, when we light the candle of hope, the candle of accompaniment, the candle of faith and grace, at the midnight hour, we say to the darkness, we beg to differ. Are we going to live into this prayer to come, Emmanuel, come. Come and dispel the fear. Come and dispel the paralysis. Let us be released to live as we can, caring for one another, striving for justice, seeking to make peace, forgiving and loving, mending and healing. Will we live into that? Don't be afraid. Really. Amen.